Blog Talk Radio.
Howdy, race fans. How the heck are you? I think that's about as close as I can get to Steve Gilmar. Big Sweat is still out of the studio. But tonight, you got Chris, Gilbert, Caution Flag, Brayton, and myself taking over the reins and carrying the show on for this week. And our thoughts and prayers with Steve as he gets back to being 100% in the studio hanging out with me tonight is Steve's co-host, Chris, Gilbert, Caution Flag, Brayton. Chris, how you doing tonight?
All right there, Mr. CJ Sports. Glad to be on the radio for the 2017 race season. I know we got things kicking off. Glad to be back on the air. Just a little quick note before we go any further. Mr. CJ Sports, I want to thank you. This is our third season together at the 110 Nation. I've got two other years that I floated around, did my own gig, and actually worked with Steve with another radio show. But it's a pleasure to be in my third season here with 110 Nation Sports. I've been with you from the growth period, and still looking forward to that Learjet ride.
Oh, me too. Could come in useful as we applied for Las Vegas here March 12th, and so that jet could come in real handy that weekend when we could fly. But
definitely. And definitely, you know what I'm still trying to figure out, Jason? How in the heck are us independent journalists supposed to pay for these trips? You know, it's really time with the growth and all of the state of 110 Nation and of course, our affiliate. If you're a sponsor and you want to help us get to some of these events, I guarantee you we can get you a hold of Mr. CJ Sports here or some of the other technical staff with 110 Nation and be glad to get you started on an advertisement program that'll help us get to these big events. 110 Nation, I tell you what, it may be a small affiliate by likes, but you find us all over the web, all over the world. And of course, credentials have been given to Homestead in Florida, Memphis Tigers. Jason, give some more. I mean, you know, this is legit. This is a real –
this
is the real deal.
We've got the Carolina Hurricanes, the Memphis Tigers. Last year, got to go to the Battle of Bristol with Virginia Tech and Tennessee. I tell you what, I had a blast with that. NHRA, you name it. We've had the opportunity.
And a lot of this is coming right out the pockets of 110 Nation. It's you know, it's hard to build revenue these days, guys. And if y'all are following us and supporting us, interaction within our Facebook pages or through the radio slots or however you want to dig, any interaction with us, tell sponsors that we're getting plenty of listens. And that's another thing, CJ. I think it's about time we go video. What do you think about that?
Oh yeah, most definitely. That'd be something we once upon a time did, and love to adventure back into it and see what that does for us.
Yeah, definitely. Any way that we can get our exposure out there is going to be great for the fans. And like I said earlier, you know, it's the support from the people who listen to us every week, and it's really been a not just a confidence booster, but this is the real deal. This is turning into a pretty big network, and getting the credentials is what it's all about. Now we just need a little bit more funding to come through the network here. And of course, you know, some people have GoFundMe accounts and all that. Look, Jason and Mr. CJ Sports and the whole staff there, they're willing to work with you. They're willing to set out an appropriate plan for you. Guys, if y'all are out there listening, like helps make some dreams happen and get that full coverage from these events, just hit up 110 Nation and try to get a hold of Mr. CJ Sports, and they'll get that thing on the roll for you there.
Definitely get in contact with me. You can email me, Mr. CJ Sports at gmail.com. You can also hit me up on Facebook as well.
You know, all this has started because, you know, Trump's pointing out all the fake news, and you notice he's called CNN fake news, MSNBC, but he hasn't said 110 Nation Sports is fake news. We don't bring the fake news. I can sit here and tell you that I've interviewed on this radio station from Jimmy Owens to Bobby Pierce to Brian Shirley, big names like Hannah Newsom, Shaylee Bade, and so many other big name stars have been interviewed right here. Of course, Davey Allison's son, Robbie Allison. Who can forget that one a couple of years ago with the legendary Lauren Rayner, son of Harry, former engine builder Harry Rayner, team owner. But yeah, we're glad to just be back on the air again, Mr. CJ Sports. I tell you, the off season seems to be getting shorter and shorter. I like to take a little vacation from about Thanksgiving till now, and we're just a couple of weeks away from getting our tracks kicked off around here in the southeastern region. Why Not Motorsports Park will come to life February 25th. For the debut, now check this out, CJ, for the debut of the USMTS Modified Series. Now, guys, this is the modified class that runs the Southern Nationals, that runs the Hell Tour. These guys are the ones that are all up through the Midwest running 4 days a week. We've somehow convinced them to come on down here for a three-day weekend. I do know that they're going to start in Jackson on Friday night, Jackson, Mississippi, at Jackson Motor Speedway. Go up there and holler at B.J. Donald and the Walker family. They'll be glad to take care of you. And then venture on over to Why Not Motorsports Park on the 25th, and that'll be the season debut and the season kickoff for the USMTS Modified. Going to be a great show. Guys like John Carney, all kinds of big-name stars from the Modified Series will be there. And then in a couple of weeks after that, Hattiesburg Speedway kicks their season off. They'll be running the USCS Sprint Cars, and I believe Modifieds as well, and that'll carry on over to Magnolia Motor Speedway. And then, of course, it's the Battle of the States coming up in March there at Why Not Motorsports Park. So, race fans, it is kicking off here in the southeast. We just seen a couple of days ago an article that hit the web. It was saying that NASCAR may be in trouble. Move over. Here comes dirt track racing. It's been people like Mr. CJ Sports and Yellow Caution Flag and Racing with Big Switch, Steve Billmeyer, and a whole lot of other colleagues that have really helped the exposure in these lower-ranked series. I say we can sit here and talk about NASCAR all day long, but so many times in this in with our show, Jason, we've been able to reach out there and tap to the next young star. And so, helping these guys, helping these kids get a big name or at least get exposure before they make it big is important to building their portfolio and their exposure. And, it's once again a great outlet to be able to do that through. And I think that that's something that we were challenged with in the beginning, but we've seen our way through it and had some pretty cool guests on here.
Most definitely. A lot of local talents that have made their way up the ranks, and we've, got to know them before, while they're running Friday and Saturday nights, your Amber Balkans and Hannah Newhouses and Kayla Lyons and Dylan Martins, and just the opportunity to sit here and get to know them and be part of watching them grow. And one of my favorite stories is Dylan Martin. The first time I had him on the show, he was like 15 years old. And, I had a 30-minute interview worth of questions all planned out. And every question that I asked him, it was a one-worded answer. It was a yes, a no, maybe one, two, three, whatever it was. It was just one-word answer. Now, after, 3 or 4 years of experience and watching him grow and participate in ARCA series and all these other series and local stuff as well. Now you get them on for a 30-minute interview and you run out of time. It's things like that I definitely get to enjoy and get an opportunity to watch, not only on the track but off the track in their personal life grow and develop and become the person that they're becoming.
I have a tendency to hit the mute button every now and then. Mama got called into work here tonight, so we've got a patch-made studio here. And if y'all hear screaming kids in the background, just know I don't beat them before I put them to bed, and they're not in bed yet. So, but they're beating on each other, and we may have some intrusion from here for the next hour of some little youngins coming in, not understanding daddy's trying to do a little bit of work here. But if it's any inconvenience to you guys, just leave it in our complaint box. I think that complaint box is probably full by now. What do you think, Jason? Have we ever even looked at it?
I
missed the crew chief, Steve Billmeyer. Golly. Hoping that Steve gets better. Of course, we built a great bond over the last 3 years. I left the show and come back after adventuring out with our own show here at the network. And then Steve called me back, and Steve's just been in pretty bad health and all. And we're going to keep the show going along. We don't have any intentions of losing this spot here on Thursday night. But the show may evolve, it may change, and Steve may come back, and everything will be the same, listeners. But once again, we appreciate y'all giving us the time here tonight, and it's kind of started off a little bit slow there, Mr. CJ Sports, but I bet we got some hot topics we can roll into, don't we?
Most definitely. Tonight's topic, the main topic, was actually influenced by a post you shared over at yellowcaucusflag.com. Dirt News and Promotions fan page. If you guys have not gone over there and like it, make sure you guys do. It's talking about dirt racing as a growing threat to NASCAR. And, you know, this was kind of a conversation that really began last year at the ratings and the attendance at NASCAR events, and it just carried over in the offseason. And obviously, I'm going to let you kind of throw out there your beliefs why it is a growing threat. And we're going to talk about some of the things that NASCAR has done in the off season that it hopes to turn this trend around and turn NASCAR around, and what dirt track has done to really become a threat, and what NASCAR could do that dirt track racing is doing to maybe help with their attendance problems.
Well, you know, I've got to pop my knuckles here because this can be controversial, and some things I may say some people will agree with, and then other times they won't. First of all, you know, to debate this, I have to put NASCAR and dirt track racing in the same category. I've been known to make this reference before that I don't really feel like dirt track racing competes with, or NASCAR really competes within its forms of entertainment. It actually has more competition with the motorsports world. A lot of people will say, well, you know, it's still the franchise, and this is the big league, this is where the big money's going. You're exactly right. It's where the money has gone for a while now. TV really changed the game in 1979. NASCAR had a run where they fell on a sponsorship who had plenty, an entitlement sponsor who had a whole lot of money and could make the bar for the growth of NASCAR. And then, of course, Winston Cup, they left, and Winston, R.J. Reynolds left, and so kind of ever since then, you know, things have been, I would say, you know, rocky for the sport of NASCAR. Sprint coming along, you know, 10 years ago, 12 years ago, it was really a big thing because, of course, everybody was getting into the cell phones. I mean, you know, it's me and Mr. CJ here, we're from the generation of a car phone being in a bag, okay? So that, in our time, that's how much it's changed. And you know, somewhere around 2005, 2006, the Internet really started getting popular, smartphones started coming out, and NASCAR really dropped the ball there. They had a website that wasn't working very well, NASCAR.com. A lot of their media rights were tied up with things that weren't expecting the growth of technology to go as fast as it did. And understand, when this contract was signed, it was a 10-year deal. And, the original contract was signed, I believe, in 2001 is actually the year that they were no longer considered the Winston Cup Series. They actually become the Nextel Cup Series. Of course, you know, Dale Earnhardt dies in 2001. Fox, you know, Daytona was run on CBS for all of these years, and in 2001 they made the transition to Fox. And of course, we lost guys like Ken Squire and Benny Parsons and stuff calling the race. And then we had former drivers like Darrell Waltrip and Larry McReynolds up in the booth. And yeah, it's been a change, and I think that NASCAR, through the time, they've had a hard time gripping onto what their fan base truly was. Their fan base was in the 90s was based off a young spurt, because we had guys like Davey Allison and Alan Quickie, who was a little bit older. Already the youth movement had started with Jeff Gordon. Bobby Labonte actually got a ride at a pretty young age. So the youth movement had really started in the 90s. But with, you know, the tragic ending of Dale Earnhardt's life and a whole fan base left up, and then with the struggles later on with Junior and the technology struggles, the growth of you know, this new form of media, this new form of entertainment through online services, Sprint didn't really keep up with that, and so it's kind of boggled all this into the mess that NASCAR's got themselves in. And at one point in time, based off of who's writing the corporate checks, yes, you could say there's competition with Sunday Night Football and racing, or Sunday Night Baseball and racing, because that's where the big corporate dollars are going. So on paper, that looks great. But what's going on in the last 5 to 6 years? Jason, and I hope everybody's keeping up with this. What's happened in the last 5 or 6 years is the internet has boomed, okay? We now have apps where we can push our – whatever we're watching on Facebook, we can now watch on TV. YouTube is now on TV. It used to be that these were separate devices. Now they've integrated into our livable space. Now when you're sitting at in the living room with your kids or whatever, you can actually pop on the YouTube channel and watch a live event from somewhere, or watch a recorded race from somewhere. None of this was really capable unless you were behind a PC 10 to 15 years ago. So the popularity and the growth of motorsports in general has boomed, not because people have just all of a sudden gained a lot of interest in motorsports. It's because these typical Saturday afternoon motocross trips or monster truck shows or tractor pulls, all of these have become more relevant now, because instead of having to go search for them, CJ, they're right there at the palm of your hands. And so it's generated a fire within all these motorsports in the motorsports world. And you know, we were just saying, look, we've kind of been a central zone of bringing on young talent, the next tomorrow stars. Well, 15 years ago, nobody was worried about the tomorrow stars, because you had to work your way up through the ranks to get there. That's the evolution of NASCAR. Has it hurt itself along the way? Most definitely, CJ. And a lot of it was, you know, poor management, I'd have to say. And, you know, changes. Everything changes. CJ, we say that the competition isn't good, but yet 20 years ago, or 30 years ago, there were cars that weren't that you know, I would say Cale Yarbrough could get 2 laps ahead of everybody. You know, Bill Elliott got 2 laps down at one point in time at Talladega in 1984, come back and won the race. These days you have to have a lucky dog to do that. You know, competition has gotten better, but, of course, the cost of racing has risen, and the cost of the tracks have risen to go to these events. It used to be at one point in time Talladega was filled of partying suburban families, country families, went to Talladega once a year. Now you have doctors and lawyers, and because, I mean, just to sit in Talladega Boulevard is going to cost you about $3,000 by the time you pay your tickets. This is not something that the average family can pay for anymore. So as NASCAR has grown, they've reached out to these higher-end people, and that's not what supported the sport and got it where it is, which goes back to where the main question and the main topic that we're talking about right now is it possible for dirt track racing to be the mammoth, to overcome, you know, the great big giant of NASCAR? At this point in time, Mr. CJ Sports, we would be fooling ourselves to say no, because you have one type of racing that seems to be retracting, seems to have a difficulty getting fans. Then you've got another side in dirt track racing where there's a big spark right now. You know, and NASCAR's been smart about it. They've done their homework. They didn't tie to Eldora for nothing. That was trended off of Prelude to the Dream, of bringing NASCAR drivers and putting them in late models. So this is an evolution of this dirt track thing. And what's killed NASCAR on the other side, you've got 12 tracks that are exactly alike. They were all built at the same time. They all have to be repaved at the same time, and they're all made the same way. You cannot find a dirt track in the United States that is identical to another dirt track. Now, once we get all that out of the way, what happened in December was proof beyond that there is traction into dirt track racing being a major entertainment spectator sport. I've walked around in go-kart series, you know, when go-kart races were happening. They say, look, this is not a spectator sport. This sport is particularly funded and kept going by the people who are in go-karts. Motocross, bike races, and stuff like that. Unless you're out of the amateur, unless you're, you know, in pro, then you're not even getting anything besides a trophy. You're just racing for a trophy. So, you know, in dirt track racing, it's really a money-making business. It's a money-making business for track promoters. It's a money-making business for engine sellers. So you've got this created industry that's right here in dirt track racing with the big race in St. Louis at the Gateway Nationals. It really proved that with 15,000 people there, this event could be huge. When you have, for the first time, 15,000 people getting into a 60,000-seat stadium, that looks small. But then you go put those 15,000 people in your local dirt track, and you wouldn't have parking for them. So that just shows, you know, we're trying to scale this with a 15,000 fan attendance versus a 50 or 60 or 80,000 fan attendance. CJ, go back and watch the 92 Daytona 500. There was 150,000 people in the stands. There was another 100,000 people down in the infield, probably estimated 300 to 325,000 people there at Daytona in 92, 93. Something happened. You go to California last year in Indianapolis for the 100-year Brickyard, and you've got 250,000, 300,000 people there. But 3 months beforehand, when they raced at California, they had 3,000 people in the stands. So the fact of it is that there is an interest. But being the entertainment business, you have to put a good product there for people to want to buy it. Right now, in the dirt track racing world, there are enough tracks around the United States to double on a weekly basis the attendance that any NASCAR track could ever get. So being that it's an industry in itself, they have their own industry. They build their own cars. They buy their own motors. Yes, we would be fooling ourselves if we didn't think that dirt track racing could come to light and be a bigger sport or take over some of the spotlight that NASCAR has had. And what's going to fall with that is corporate dollars. You have a major corporation, Lucas Oil, who has made a big-time investment. You have Craftsman, who I don't know how that's going to work, being that Sears just sold their shares in Craftsman. But I heard that it was Stanley Black & Decker that bought Craftsman, so they may be okay. But think about Craftsman. They were in the truck series. Now they've gone to dirt. Do you think that there's not a transfer of money? You had NASCAR money, and it's now dirt money? Okay, there's the trend right there. That's how this starts. When you had 15,000 people show up at the Gateway Nationals in December, the coldest month of, you know, 2 weeks before Christmas, and you had the field already full months before the show even started. And as a matter of fact, if you couldn't make the race, then they called somebody else on the list because there were more people registered than what could actually be there. So it was actually a waiting list for some people who wanted to race, but the spots were already filled. So they actually had to turn cars away, guys. They had to turn cars away. And also, may I add, that there was a snowstorm the weekend of the Gateway Nationals. So, you know, guys, there's growth here. Dirt track racing, like I said, is its own industry in itself. It's a food mechanism. It's an entertainment mechanism. It is a gambling mechanism. It is a hobby for the elitist. It's a, when I go back to gambling, I'm not saying that people are betting on cars. What I'm saying is, if you've got a man that has $20,000 and he's running a late model series with all these rules, and he can outmoney them, just don't know at the end of the year if he's going to make back what he spent to outrun everybody. So in a way, that's kind of what I mean by rich man gambling. You know, the industry is moving in the right direction. Safety seems to be a number one on everybody's mind. Drug tests are now going to be instituted in the world of outlaws. Mr. CJ Sports, you tell me how dirt racing isn't knocking on the door right now of NASCAR, because I think I've held the lineup here for long enough.
I agree. I mean, they are absolutely positively gaining ground. And what baffles me about the whole situation is it's not that NASCAR is not trying. You know, we see a change in title sponsor. I think we all agree Sprint didn't really do that great of a job of being a title sponsor. We watched them change up the formats to help break the races up, to help, you know, keep attention. Because, you know, I think that's another thing that helps the dirt track scene versus the weekend races in NASCAR. There's no dirt track races lasting 4 or 5 hours like Daytona 500. That's, you know, a good 3 hour race. To sit through 3 hours on a Friday or Saturday night, you done watched 4 or 5 races easily, depending on, you know, the field and how well they perform.
Right. I mean, CJ, we've been known to be racing at 4 o'clock in the morning, and we started at 5 with drivers meeting, not 5 in the morning, but 5 in the afternoon. You know, these guys are dedicated. They spend long hours at the track. But the thing is, the reason why the fans stay isn't because they're running a 500-mile race. It's because they're running 7 or 8 different races and through heats and all that. So they're steadily putting out something that's entertaining to the fans. NASCAR is having a very hard time when they can't get people to come to the tracks to have, you know, families sitting around the living room. I heard the other day on a popular radio show that it is, the study's proven that the attention span is now down to 8 seconds for a human, which is actually 3 seconds less than a cat. So a cat actually has longer I done lost my train of thought. You see what I'm saying? you see how easy it is? We only have 8 seconds to get something figured out, and our mind goes to something else. So, you know, NASCAR's at a very difficult time right now because they're not getting people to show up to the tracks. What is getting dirt track racing on the roll is free publicity through Facebook and all these other social outlets sites. In return, people get excited. They watch the race. They're reminded of how fun it is to be at a dirt track. They show up with the family. They drop that $250. Now, here's where NASCAR gets their throat cut. Because once you get a family addicted to dirt track racing, all of a sudden going to that cup race once or twice a year, you know, that seems to be a problem now because you want to go to this race, or you have, you know, you've got local tracks competing at a very high level. Dirt track racing is at its best right now, full field of cars. You know, 15 years ago when you had 3 cars, 4 cars per class, it really wasn't that much of entertainment. But now what we're doing is we're filling each class up with 20, 24 cars, sending cars home before the feature. So, you know, the fans are actually getting more for their buck. They're not having to travel as far. And NASCAR is allowing the stands to be shown on national TV empty. I've got one thing to say before I let you take this over, because it's very important. When I first started in the promotional business, people said, Chris, why don't you try to land advertisement or whatever? And I was like, I'm trying to, but we're just not well known enough. So I created certain things that we could sell within ourselves to create a type of advertisement for the product. Now, these products probably didn't sell too well, and it really wasn't beneficial, But what it did was it gave us a presence that we were working with something. Bob Jenkins fields Front Row Motorsports. Okay, he fields fours for Front Row Motorsports. He's the car owner. Bob Jenkins has never really, his first 5 years or 6 years in NASCAR, he didn't have a real sponsor. But instead of Bob Jenkins riding a white, unpainted race car around the track, Bob Jenkins was a franchise owner of Taco Bell KFC. So what did he do in Long John Silver's? He, in return, put his franchise on the sides of the cars. Now, there was no actual payment going for that wrap to be on that car. Taco Bell was not giving Bob Jenkins any money. Bob Jenkins is actually paying money to Taco Bell for a franchise license. But instead of riding around with a white, unpainted car where the fan could say, that car has no money, it's going to be slow, that car is sponsored by Taco Bell. Bob Jenkins has been a master at bringing in new sponsorship to NASCAR. If you'll look at Front Row Motorsports and the types of sponsors that they brought to the sport, they were the setting trend of, we're going to get new people because the old money's not working. We've got to go find new money. Look at the partnership with Love's. Great standing partnership. Front Row Motorsports could be on the verge of being the next Dodge team. And I'm not going to say this in any other form or fashion. I'm not going to continue on it. But I promise you, that man, Bob Jenkins, who started Front Row Motorsports back in 2006, has had a game plan to become a big race team. And he has done the proper things along the way to make sure that he's doing it properly. And so as I'm saying this, what I'm saying is, To have a product being displayed to everybody in the world through national TV that these stands are empty, people lose interest. NASCAR's best bet is to take the tickets and on race day go give them to everybody within the town and fill those stands up. If it means $5 parking and $1 a head to come in and fill the seats, CJ, people are not going to be interested in something that they don't believe other people are interested in, right or wrong. And I'll let you take this floor.
Okay, and when you start talking about the fans, I go to local tracks just not often. I think I made it to two local tracks last year at the Fayetteville Motor Speedway, and I don't know the name of the other one. We traveled about an hour or so to get to it. We went and watched the young Caleb Lyons race. It was just on the other side of the border from North Carolina down to South Carolina. And I got the same feeling at both tracks, and I'm sure you're going to agree 100% with the tracks that you work at. I think one of the biggest reasons, and I don't think people think about this a lot, one of the biggest reasons that the local tracks, the local dirt tracks, are growing the way they're growing is it's more of a family atmosphere. When you go out to the track Friday night, you're expecting to see Bob and Jane. You're expecting to see Pete and Jennifer and their kids. You're expecting, you know, because it's a family thing. This is what we do Friday night. Everybody within 100 miles of this track, this is what we do every Friday night. This is what we do on Saturday night. Everybody goes to this track. You don't get that same feeling when you go to a NASCAR event. You got people coming from all parts of the world, and it's not a family atmosphere. It's not so much a brotherhood.
I would say only here recently because, you know, CJ, we go to Talladega every year. 10 years ago when Heather and I first started going, the first time we stayed in the campgrounds and we met people and they're like, yeah, we're here every year. We're here every year and we're parked right here. We're like, really? You're here every year? So you mean if we come back, we're going to see y'all again next year? Yeah. Bro, unfortunately, something happened about 3 or 4 years ago. And now if you're not meeting the new people coming in and you're not sticking your hand out there, all your neighbors are gone. Something's happened. Either they've gone through financial tough times or they found another hobby. So, you know, what you're saying is right on path. I mean, if you're going to be able to go out with your friends, in other words, it used to be a family thing to go to the track to these big events. When they started out moneying themselves or outsourcing themselves, that's when the everyday fan went back to his roots. And that's what we're talking about here. It's not the fact that dirt track is going to rise above NASCAR. It's the fact that the fans have decided that they would rather go to their local track than to spend the time that it takes to keep a popular sport like NASCAR moving.
And on top of that, when you're at your local track, you have an opportunity to learn about these drivers and the PR people, the promoters and everything, promote everybody, and it's an opportunity to, if you're out there perform, to get the spotlight. When we're sitting here watching an event on Sunday afternoon, Dale Jr. didn't participate in like the last 15 races of the season, yet Dale Jr. was talked about more than most of the drivers that were out there on the actual track. Same with Danica Patrick. As much as I like Danica, they spend so much time talking about somebody that's always in the 25th to last place position, not in the top 15 to even 20. Instead of spending more time, you know, spotlighting on these drivers that are up there performing, we don't have, when you go to your local Friday night, Saturday night track, you're not overbeared with Jeff Gordon talk and Dale Jr. talk and Danica Patrick talk. Now you get to talk about the talent on the track. And,
right.
Focus on what is actually going on today at this moment, not what happened, in the holler.
The quickest way to get a fan to roll their eyes is tell the same joke this week from the announcer stand that you told last week. They don't want to hear it. They want something fresh and new. And I'll tell you the source of the problem, or what I believe is the source of the problem. I'm not knocking them. I'm just giving this as my opinion. Back in the old days, CJ, we had folks like Ken Squire. We had real announcers. We had real commentators, Dick Vergeron, Dr. Jerry Punch, Alan Bestwick. These guys went to school, journalism school, or they rose through the ranks of their local TV stations or radio stations, and they got the gig to become a commentator, a big-time commentator. But now networks would rather go hire Jeff Gordon at $9 million a year instead of hiring the man who paid, $100,000 for an education. You see, so now you've got unqualified people in a position where they don't even know what they're doing because they've been a driver for 20 years, and now they're stuck in a commentating box, and they're just going off the top of their head. They don't even know who Chris Buescher is. They don't know who Dave Blaney was because they were always in the rearview mirror. So the stars are going to talk about the stars. Why? Because stars don't hang out with the young guns or the nobody. Stars hang out with stars. When you fill these positions with people like Darrell Waltrip, Dale Jr., and other commentators like that, you're taking away the people who were qualified and trained to actually do the job, which in return makes them less entertaining.
And I'm going to make a point about the people in the broadcast booth here in 1 second. We do got a caller. I do want to plug him in. Thanks for calling tonight. What is your name, and how you doing?
I'm doing good. My name's Steve. How y'all doing?
Good.
Good. I'm sorry.
Go ahead. What did you want to bring up?
I agree with what y'all saying about the drivers. They no longer connect with the common people. You used to get their autograph, but it's no longer like that. I've said, and I'll say it again. And this, to me, the NASCAR has turned into, with the new systems they got in, I'm calling it circus racing. And the reason I call it that is because there's three events. You got one, two, and three. You got your two smaller events and your main event. And I mean, it's, I'm really disgruntled with the whole thing.
You're one of them old timers. You spend your time, trying to find something wrong with the sport. But you got to accept that the change is there. We appreciate you calling and all, and I think I recognize the voice here. But, one thing that we feel in short track industry is you've got to bring something positive to the table. Now, I think positively on the note that you're on, is it more positive to have Monster Energy making these changes or not to have an entitlement sponsor and for the sport to continue in the direction that it was going? Can you answer that one?
I don't think Monster Energy is a good fit for the for NASCAR. Truthfully, I don't think that they are. They've never advertised one single advertisement on radio. All this stuff is word of mouth. There's absolutely no advertising they've ever done other than word of mouth. So therefore, people don't really know who Monster Energy is. I mean, they know Monster Energy by the drink, but they've never advertised. You know, come on. You know, how can you invest in something that you don't advertise in? You know, it's just not possible. I mean, it is possible, but it just don't make no sense.
It is what, 2.5 weeks from the Daytona 500, and I agree. I've not seen any commercials. Have you seen any commercials that up in the season? I think I've seen one or two Daytona Day to pump up Daytona a little bit, but I think I've seen them on Facebook. But I agree. I've not seen nothing to even get you to build the hype. There's a lot of changes that happened in this offseason, title sponsor, stages, the package deal, a whole bunch of things have changed, and you're not even trying to build the excitement off of last year, the changes in the off season to get anybody or, you know, nothing. Like, that is kind of odd to me.
It is. I mean, there again, what have they done? They've done nothing. They've come in, they wrote a halfway check. You know, I mean, it's just that, in my opinion, that...
You voted for Hillary, right?
Yeah, right. There ain't no chance I voted for Hillary.
I think that, once again, we're shooting the cow before we even know if the leg's broke. And I just don't see... Technically, if you just closed your eyes for 30 seconds as the caution flag come out and you turn the volume off, you wouldn't even know that there was a caution for competition. You would just think it was another one of those stupid debris cautions. I think that this is something the NASCAR is looking at. And with their new rule announcement saying that no longer can a car be basically patched back together, and they only have 5 minutes on pit road to do any necessary body work to get the car back out on the track. I love it too. And a lot of people are like, well, it'd be only 13 cars at Talladega. No, what you'll have is better driving. What you'll have is people taking less chance. But you'll refrain from the possibility of Kevin Harvick winning another championship by going out and wrecking the field.
I bet you
after
this
he was already, you know, he would have, that car would have been one of the first ones deemed uncompatible. And sure, you know, he rolled out on a restart and he knew that he was, so, you know, he did exactly what he had to do and he wound up winning the championship. Now, I can go year for year and tell you a biased situation that caused the championship to go somebody else's way. But what I mean by that is NASCAR wants to make sure that manipulation of certain things can't happen. Why?
I guarantee you the rule will be changed before the eighth race of the season. If Jimmy Johnson, Dale Earnhardt Jr., or one of these people, if they have bad luck in any kind of way and they are way down in the points, NASCAR will jump in and go, oh, we got to change this. This is unintended consequences.
I just really don't think the leash is that small. The only thing that I'm afraid of is – there's going to be a gray area in this, and the first ones to try it are going to be the beneficiaries and the first losers in this. I don't see how they can say that a car would be deemed uncompatible at one track like Martinsville, where you can basically compete with your fenders tore off, versus a car at Talladega. Now, will that cause conflict? Such and such was able to return, but I'm not able to return at this track. So, you know, until that gray area or until that has been addressed, I think that we're still at a problem here. I do understand the five-minute clock time, and I do understand, you know, we have a situation several years ago when Carl Edwards was driving for Roush Racing. If I'm not mistaken, Carl blew a motor. Well, it had never been done before, but being Roush, the Cat in the Hat, he basically pulled the car in the shop, in the garage. They rebuilt the motor, and with about 15 or 20 laps to go, Carl Edwards come back out onto the track. Now you're not going to have that. And these guys are going to have to take that 36th position. They're going to have to take that 38th position where there's not going to be any money at it.
You're
and
wrong
so that's
going to
kind of even
wrong.
The field.
No.
That's going to kind of even it out. Now what you've done by taking a team like Jimmy Johnson, who we've seen can go in and drop a whole new nose and a rear fender on the car and run faster than what it did beforehand because they're not having to comply by the rules. Remember, you know, these cars are supposed to be teched. They're supposed to come in. They're supposed to go through post-race tech the same way they come through pre-race tech. I can name you several situations where Jimmy Johnson, there was no way in heck that the job, the fab job that they did on that car to put it back together was going to pass post-race tech. So technically, that could be, you know, what they're doing is they're stopping basically a competitive advantage from a richer race team. Now, you know, where you've got a guy who's got five volunteer crewmen, they have a chance now to finish 34th instead of 38th. And I think that that's going to really change because now what you have instead of 16 to 18 top-tier drivers, you're actually putting those guys between 18th and 24th back in the game because each of those points matter. I refer back to A.J. Allmendinger with Finch Racing. A.J., all year long, he would have a great first half of the race. Somewhere about 100 or 150 to go, that right front tire would blow out. He would hit the wall, and his day would be over with. What's great about segment racing is now A.J. Allmendinger, if he was running in the top 10 or top 5 in one of these segments, he actually benefits from that. So what you've done is now you've added a more competition between the 18th car and the 30th car. Of course we're going to have 10 cars that are not compatible. That's racing. You go to any track wherever you go and you're like, man, that guy doesn't have a chance. And most of the time they're the one that causes the wreck. And trust me, in dirt track racing where it's getting to be these high-dollar cars, they don't want their cars touched. It's not bumping is racing anymore, rubbing is racing. They don't want you to touch their car. They want to race you clean. You get a guy out there with junk racing against a $30,000 race car, that guy driving that $30,000 race car is scared to death that the guy driving the junk is going to wreck him. And when, you know, it's like a magnet, or it's like when you fear something the most, it'll happen. So these situations have happened, and it's happened in all forms of racing. I think NASCAR's got a better hand on controlling that, which in return makes better competitive racing for the 18th through the 30th place guy. Now you'll have somebody like maybe an A.J. Allmendinger who can earn his way into the points championship to the chase by earning certain plate points throughout the season. I mean, if I'm a crew chief and I know that I can pick up an extra 10 bonus points versus my position, I want to be hitting my marks throughout the race. Now you've made the race competitive through the whole thing. What they want you to do is just like baseball. Baseball is a stat sport. Unfortunately, NASCAR and racing in general is not really a stat sport. If you're going to be a major sport, you have to have stats. It's very hard to keep stats on local drivers around here because we don't have a state registry. We don't know who won more races in Mississippi than anybody because we don't have a state registry or a book of archives that keeps up with this information. Sure, such and such can say he's got 400 wins. Well, the other guy, he can sit here and say, well, I've got 500. And then some other guy who ain't even from around here can say, well, I got 501. You just don't remember me. So, you know, there's when you've got to get the sport involved back in stats. And when you have people who are playing their, you know, think about baseball. You had a scorecard. You know, football, it was all about touchdowns. Or, you know, football is a little bit more complex. Basketball, you watch. But baseball in general, you had a scorecard in front of you. That's what made baseball popular. You could follow along the commentator on the radio and actually fill out your box scores as you went. You didn't need a notebook or anything like that. So I think that that's going to really come back to where racing is going to be about competitiveness and track records are going to mean something and halfway races are going to mean something.
I want to correct you on something. If you have a mechanical problem, you can go to the garage and you can get it fixed. and not be underneath the 5-minute clock. The 5-minute clock only applies to wrecked race cars. It does not apply to mechanical problems. If you have a mechanical problem, you can go behind the wall, you can repair it, and come back out. If you've been wrecked, you have 5 minutes to repair a wrecked race car.
And I read the article on that, and they said that, you know, it has a lot to do with cautions, breed cautions. These cars come back out in a quick fix. They throw tape all over the track. They lose parts and metal. And these, in return, cause longer cautions, and they also breed more cautions.
Well,
I feel good about that, because if Denny Hamlin starts the race with a broken oil line and it's just a hose or you know, something to that, or valve cover's not fastened in all the way, then they actually have a chance to get that fixed. But in a way, though, you know, non-competitive is non-competitive, and I think anybody that sits in the pits for 5 to 6 minutes at 30-second laps, they're 12 to 14 laps down, you might as well say they're uncompetitive, too, and they have no business out there. Because if they're going to try to eliminate that, then they need to look into the team situation where these team drivers are affecting championship points because somebody comes back out there and runs around the track, you know, to get their points or whatever. You know, now I think that could be an open – maybe that's something that will evolve into more than what it is right now, Steve.
All right, well, what about what happened last year at Martinsville? The way the rule is written is that if you're towed and towed behind the wall with a wrecker, then basically you're done. Well, last year at Martinsville, one of the cars got hung up on one of the bump stops trying to get into pit road. I don't exactly remember where it was at. But he got hung up, and all he needed was the wrecker to hook to him and pull him off there. But the wrecker hooked up to him, towed him all the way to the garage.
Okay, and that situation occurred as well at Eldora with Bobby Pierce, the young gun, Bobby Pierce. He wound up in the wall there, in the inside wall. And NASCAR's policy is if you have to get a hook truck, you have to go to the infield care center. You have to take a ride in the ambulance. So, you know, it's basically a safety rule measure there that's being implemented, and I like the rule, but in some places, such as the case that you just mentioned, you question the liability of the rule. Bobby Pierce looked at the track official like, what do you mean I got to get in the wrecker? I want to just get a pullback, and I'm going to go back racing, because in dirt track racing, that's what we do. But considering how technical the sport is and head concussions and everything else, NASCAR feels that it's, you know, very important that if a wrecker has to pick the car up, that the driver has to be escorted by ambulance to the infield care center and deemed uncompatible. I mean, you know, NASCAR's really going to have to look at what they've offered here, and they're going to have to make a decision of whether or not they're really going to stand on an uncompetitive car. Because if a car is 12 laps down, we all want to say Dale Earnhardt won 1998 Daytona 500. I will take you back, and I'm going to get a lot of rip for this. Dale Earnhardt won the 1998 Daytona 500 because Rick Mass was two laps down and held up Jeremy Mayfield and a charging other car. I can't think of the name right now. Rick Mass slowed down, took the inside lane, and instead of like every other lap car that was supposed to either get completely out of the way or go high or something like that, Mass stayed with the draft pack and actually blocked for Dale Earnhardt to win the 1998 Daytona 500. Throw oranges at me if you want to. Boo me off the stage. It's perfectly clear. It was a gentleman's rule that when the leaders come around, the lap traffic moves out of the way. Rick Mass fell into the draft, knocked Jeremy Mayfield back, and a couple of others blew their steam off. Dale Earnhardt cruised on to his first ever Daytona 500. Don't hate the messenger. I mean, for real, I know there's a lot of people out there booing me right now. I mean, for real. How dare you? That's a blasphemy. Everybody wanted Dale Earnhardt to win. Yes, exactly. That's why NASCAR let it slide. When Harry Gant pushed Rick Mast, or was it Rick Mast pushed Harry Gant? I think it was at Talladega, wasn't it, Steve?
I think it was.
Yeah, he ran out of gas, and you know, of course, Rick Mast gets up behind Harry, pushes him a little bit, and you know, Harry wins the race. What he did was illegal, and everybody knew it, but it was deemed acceptable because You know, he was a likable guy. NASCAR's got to get out of that. They've got to get out of where he's a likable guy or he's a former champion or whatever. If the car is deemed incompatible, and in dirt track racing, when you watch a super late model race, they start 24 cars. I'm going to tell you a secret about super late models. Most of them, just like sprint cars, they get a guaranteed start money. So what you've got is you've got a field of 24 cars, but a guaranteed start money of $300. That means after your top 10, basically 11th through 24th pays $300. So what happens after 20 and 25 laps go down, cars start falling off. They get a lap down. You can't get your lap back in dirt track racing unless you got some super-duper tires. What winds up happening is these guys fall off the track. They fall off the track. Why? Because they're not racing. They're not competitive enough to get up in that top 10. So instead of destroying their equipment, whatever's wrong with it or risking getting into a wreck, they take their 13th place and they take their $300 and go home. Why? Because they weren't competitive enough to run up front. This is something that NASCAR's really going to have to – I mean, if they're going to go in this direction, they need to take a couple of notes from dirt track racing, because basically there's no reason for a guy to compete when he's getting paid the same to finish 15th as he would be to finish 24th. You know, I've seen a lot of times Scott Blomquist come out, and, you know, Scott will go to any track around the nation and blow their drawers off. But I've also seen him show up at Magnolia Motor Speedway, make two laps in the feature race and pull up, and you're like, but he's the superstar. Look, Blomquist knew that he didn't have the right setup, or he knew he didn't have the right car. He was not going to go out there and destroy $15,000, $20,000 shocks trying to race a car that wasn't going to get him in the money. So, you know, once again, we go back to, you know, dirt track racing has found a way to compete with the uncompetable, and by gentlemen's reaction, these guys fall off. They go ahead and park their stuff. They're smart enough not to destroy their stuff. NASCAR is going to see that this is going to be something that they're going to have to deal with. I think I went a little too long on that one.
When you get wound up, you get wound up.
Well, I mean, you know, it is what it is. And so, you know, like I said, what I'm concerned about the most is you go race Chicagoland, Jimmy Johnson gets his whole nose tore off. They go in 5 minutes, they got the thing patched up. He goes back out there. He's three laps, four laps down. But he was able to compete. Then you've got another guy who's trying to break in, you know, 2 points away from maybe making the chase here in the, you know, right at the cutoff. And he's not a popular driver. NASCAR says, nope, you're uncompetitive. You can't compete. Go to the garage. That's going to be where the problem's going to start. And NASCAR's got to stay away from these kind of problems. Because if you're going to be a real sport, NFL, we all can question the last play of the game, the guy's leg was down or if it wasn't. But NFL does a good enough job through most of their games that you don't question the finish. That's not necessarily the case and hasn't been the case in NASCAR when you've got drivers themselves saying that it's rigged. That's not good for the sport.
Well,
I want to say that what I like about this rule, and we're going to get things wrapped up. It's already coming up on 10 o'clock. The rule, the two things that stuck out to me and instantly made me love this rule was the fact that, one, we didn't have to worry about cars coming back out there that had no business being out there and debris falling off. That point started to make. That was the first thought across my mind. Now we ain't got to worry about, you know, the fans crying with another debris caution. You know, 10 laps left. It kind of just changes everything, and I'm glad that's going to help avoid that. The other thing is, I feel this is going to help the cost, because now you don't have these big teams that could afford to bring these extra noses and these extra corner panels and these extra this and that to get the cars fixed up and get back out there and gain a few positions. And the big teams had that money, the Hendrix, the Joe Gibbs Racing. But when you talk about these smaller teams like Front Row and Schwinn and all these Finch and Tommy Baldwin and all these other small teams, they don't necessarily have that money just to well, they have the money, but they could use that money, invest that money more wisely into their operation to help the performance on the track versus worrying about having to bring all this extra stuff. Now that kind of eliminates that. It helps drive down the cost. Now you're not required to bring all this extra stuff because if you damage your car to that extent, you're not going to be allowed to race anyway. So I have a feeling in the long run this is going to help lower the cost of racing because now that's a lot less stuff that each team's got to bring.
I agree, CJ. I agree with that a lot. And what I think as well, back to dirt track racing and how their payout is structured, I think that you'll see NASCAR adopt a similar payout structure because what we're looking for is the 16 best. The rest of the, 24-car field, they're the wannabes. There's 16 that are guaranteed for 10 races. Everybody is searching for those 16 places. If you cut the purses and you basically paid 21st through 40th and they made all the same amount of money, then what you've taken is you're taking a little bit more money away from these bigger teams and you're adding an incentive for the smaller teams to make those investments to run faster. So, you know, it's kind of scaling back. It's almost like a tax revenue or a lottery tax to the bigger teams because now a 21st place team, instead of making $40,000-$50,000 more than the 30th place car, you're basically stacking the money on the top 20 places and the rest of the field gets an entry fee purse, you know. And I think that will kind of bring back – the problem is we've got three different types of racing going on the racetrack. We've got the super teams, we've got the rental teams, and then we've got the I'm just trying to make it to the track teams. Mm-hmm. Until you can kind of make a little bit better, you know, combine the super team with the I'm just renting here team, you know, you're basically, until those two get a little bit closer together, the I'm just showing up to race team has no chance at all and will never have a chance. I don't want to see that continue in the best racing, form of racing that we can be involved in. I want to see competitive cars from the first through the 40th because these are supposed to be the top 40 drivers in the world. I'll leave it at that.
Steve, anything you want to throw out there before we get you out of here so we can wrap things up?
I'm really just not looking forward to this NASCAR season. I just think it's kind of a gimmick, and I mean until I'm proved wrong, I think by the eighth race of the year that it will be major changes coming. You know, the proof to me will be the Bristol race. If Bristol, the Dave Bristol race, if that place is packed out, I'd say it's a success. But if nobody show up, you know,
it didn't take 1 year for NASCAR to get in this situation. I think that it took many years. I tried to explain that in the earlier part of the show, that this is something that didn't just happen overnight. This has been a continuous bad run by NASCAR and it just reminds me so well of a president who's taken office and trying to fix the things that was broken by another administration. I kind of feel like we're doing the same thing to Monster Energy that the leftist and the liberal media is doing to Trump. They're not giving him a chance. And you know, in order to make racing great again or in order to make America great again or racing again, whatever you want to call it, it starts from within. It starts from the fan. It starts from the driver. It starts from the voter. You know, we are the ones that move this change. I don't want to run out a sponsor, an entitlement sponsor, who has done very successful things in other racing forms of racing divisions. I don't want to run them out too early when they may be the last entitlement sponsor NASCAR would ever have. Because if this doesn't work out in a two-year deal, I just don't see the next company coming along and saying, hey, we're going to dump $10 million or $50 million into the entitlement to this because it just doesn't seem to make sense. These days, advertisement dollars are going a lot faster than what they used to, and corporations are looking to make as much revenue with as little expense as possible, and advertisement just doesn't seem to be on the forefront of a lot of these major companies. And that will also be reflected back to the monopoly that's been created over a down economic time. A lot of people don't understand, if you want to find out how good racing's doing, you just follow the Fortune 500 companies, because that's what made NASCAR what it is. You know, in a economic downturn, what you have is a lot of big companies swallowing up little bitty companies, and that means that there's less mom and pops out there to sponsor. If Procter & Gamble owns all these companies, well, these companies used to be single-handed companies, mom and pop companies who bought a little bit of sponsorship every year for some kind of sporting event or association, and you know, that's how they spent their advertisement dollars. But Procter & Gamble sits down, they own 15 companies or 20 major companies or PepsiCo, and they write out one large check and say, okay, this is what we're spending this year, because we have all these other places where we have to go spend money. At PepsiCo has got to spend money in NASCAR. They've got to spend money in NBA. They have to spend money in NFL. They have to spend money. You know, you forget the economic strain that we're putting on these, you know, multi-billion-dollar, trillion-dollar companies, but they're being forced to buy advertisement through each and every entertainment event, along with movies and everything else. So it's not like they don't get a phone call every day asking, can you help support this for us? You know, I'm sure Procter & Gamble probably gets pretty tired of it. I'm sure Philip Morris probably gets pretty tired of it. That's why when they cut the checks, they don't talk to you for the rest of the year. Well, guys, I think we had a great time here tonight, and whether anybody knows this or not, the guest called in here, Steve. This is actually my father. He's a dedicated wheelman. He's been out on the road for 30 years. He's the one that sat me down 36 years ago, 35 years ago, and you know, participated in my very first Daytona 500, which would have been February of 1981. I've carried the tradition on with my own four kids. They all can say that their first Daytona 500 was the first year that they were born. Only one child actually had that within a couple of months. Most of my children had to wait till almost a year old before they got to see their first Daytona 500. But they were, of course, in front of the screen for any race that's on TV. Because it was passed down from me by my dad. We've kind of got an opportunity right now to maybe bring him on as a correspondent or a commentator or disc jockey or whatever the heck you want to call him while Steve's out. And maybe things work out right, maybe even launch a Racing with Chris and Daddy Steve show. But I'm introducing y'all to my father, Steve Creighton, and I hope that none of y'all were annoyed, and trust me, he didn't vote for Hillary, but I do wonder sometimes if he doesn't just call in and try to make a mess of something, because, I mean, in your right mind, how can you not like this segment, Racing? I mean, my gosh, we could spend another hour on that, but anyway, thank you guys for listening. I think we had a few other topics to discuss, but, you know, anytime we can fill up an hour of airtime and barely breathe or go through the full scripted notes here, I think it was a good show. It's good to be back on the air for the 2017 race season. We look forward to another great year with 110 Nation Sports. And we hope that, you know, of course, Steve Billmeyer gets better. I'd like to say that my dad will be filling in on this time slot until we hear from Steve or know from Steve. Sometimes Steve Creighton may be a little bit later coming on the show. He is a full-time employee over the wheel. He owns his own company as a truck driver, so he can kind of make his own times. But, you know, life as a truck driver, sometimes you got to rock and roll. So I will try to enjoy him as much as possible this year. And, of course, we want to give a big thanks to Mike Perricone for listening to the show and always there on the backdrop, fixing us. And anytime we're having any complications or need stats, Mike's right there. And, of course, I want to thank Mr. CJ Sports, better known as Jason McMillan, for the opportunity to be here on this great nation of sports at 110. I want to thank all of our syndicated partners for streaming this show. I hope that we were well entertained we kept everybody well entertained for the night. I know, guys, I probably sound a little bit different, but let me tell you something. When you've been off the air for about 3 or 4 months, you actually kind of question how you're talking and the words that you're going to use. So, guys, just give me a couple more weeks, and I'll be back in the tone, and we'll roll this thing right through. But once again, I want to thank y'all for listening here tonight on Racing with Big Sweat. And as Steve Billmeyer would say, how the hell are you? Well, it's about that time to go to bed. So, guys, I want to thank y'all once again for listening. Be back next Thursday, same bat time, same bat place. Mr. CJ, got anything there that you want to close on?
I got to make sure to thank Fit for Life, Snafu Seasoning, H-Doc Mail of It Works, I-95 Sports Network, Mahi Radio Network. Also, tomorrow night, right here on the 110 Nation Sports Radio Network, Hot Laps with Stats, the number one night on the 110 Nation Sports Radio Network. He's got Kyler Driscoll, a young man who races go-karts, mentors his brother, founder of the Cardboard Kid. We had him on this show before. Also, we got Fran Lawyer, a motorsports photographer, colleague, friend of respected Northeast Lensman, Howie Hodge, who passed away last week. A lot of great stuff going on here on the 110 Nation Sports Radio Network. Looking forward to be back here Thursday night, racing with Big Sweat with these guys. Until then, you guys have a great night.
All right. Thank you.